what's working for them to work inside the Democratic Party right now. You know, Bernie really showed the opportunity to kind of level up left-wing politics by simply participating in the process. And it's hard to, you know, remember what a revolutionary idea that was in 2016.
I'm Jane Costin, and this is What a Day, the show that wishes just one Florida Republican could be normal for like 10 seconds. On Sunday, GOP House Representative Randy Fine was caught rifling through someone's mail while going door-to-door campaigning. Or, seriously, Fine is also mind-bendingly Islamophobic. But his opponent in today's primary, right-wing weirdo Dan Bilzerian, was condemned by both Democrats and Republicans for releasing a campaign ad calling Fine a, quote, satanic whore, and asking whether we should revisit the opinions of Adolf Hitler. Again, can we get just one normal Florida Republican? Just one! I know you can do it, Florida. On today's show, we do a deep dive into the Democratic Socialists of America with Charles Homans, reporter for the New York Times. Before we slide into a socialist summer, here's what we're following today, Tuesday, August 18th.
The strait is open, and the oil prices are coming down, and they will continue to come down unless we decide to do something far more drastic than we're doing. Iran is in big trouble. They have 300% inflation. The country's a mess.
President Trump said again Monday that the U.S. controls the Strait of Hormuz, and he added on Tuesday that there are no talks going on between the U.S. and Iran, which is weird because his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, said that talks with Iran were ongoing. Seriously, Trump posted on Truth Social Tuesday, quote, "There are no talks or conversations going on or scheduled with the Islamic Republic of Iran. The naval blockade remains in full force and effect. The Hormuz Strait is open and operating. All water mines have been removed or detonated. Thank you for your attention to this matter." Which is not at all what his son-in-law and special envoy said. Whom to believe? A guy who lies a lot? Or a private citizen tasked with ending a war of choice who has also lied a lot? Maybe we should ask Iran. According to Iranian state media on Tuesday, Iran's top negotiator said that the Strait of Hormuz is closed and will be closed until the U.S. abides by June's Memorandum of Understanding, which the U.S. and Iran agreed upon. Remember that?
Meta has decided that it is going to fight this tooth and nail in all of these different cases and will probably try to appeal it all the way up to the Supreme Court. So it must view this as existential. And it must view this as a principle worth protecting.
Former U.S. Assistant Attorney General Jonathan Cantor spoke to CNBC today about Meta's Summer of Accountability. That's what I'm calling it. States are seeking billions of dollars in damages for social media harms to children in a pivotal trial for Meta platforms. Attorneys General for California, Colorado, Kentucky, and New Jersey want changes to how the company operates its platforms, as well as a penalty that could, in theory, total as much as $1.4 trillion. 29 states sued Meta in 2023 over child safety and privacy. The remaining 25 will go to trial later. The company also faces lawsuits in state courts. The lawsuit accuses the social media giant of contributing to the youth mental health crisis by knowingly and deliberately designing features that addict children to its platforms. It also argues that Meta routinely collects data on children under 13 without their parents' consent, in violation of federal law. And maybe Meta is serving as a cautionary tale for all tech companies, but no one is listening, because OpenAI launched ChatGPT for teens today. The highly anticipated chatbot is intended to help students work through homework problems instead of simply answering questions for them. Great. An AI tutor. OpenAI says the chatbot is tailored for kids aged 13 to 17 and has stronger protections and content restrictions around things like suicide, self-harm, and romantic or sexual chats. One wild feature, the chatbot will predict a user's age based on its messages, automatically setting up an account with teen restrictions if the user is deemed under 18 years old. Adults can verify their age if mistaken for a teen. And that's my cue to head out, as I talked like I was 38 years old when I was 15. On today's episode of Are We Living in a Democracy or a Plutocracy?, we take a look inside the Trump administration, and the numbers are damning. According to a report from the consumer advocacy group Public Citizen, 57 people in the Trump administration are worth at least $100 million. That includes 17 ambassadors and 40 officials in senior posts across the executive branch. That's obviously a lot of people, but let's put that into perspective for you. According to the report, George W. Bush's administration and the Biden administration each had 5 members worth $100 million or more. The Obama administration had just 3. Again, Trump's administration has 57. But that's not all. The report also estimates that the total combined personal net worth of Trump and his cabinet lands somewhere between $3.5 and $7.1 billion. No wonder they're not fazed by astronomical gas and grocery prices. And that's the news. Let's talk about DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America. You've probably heard a lot about DSA this year, as political figures who are either members of the organization or associated with its beliefs are running in and winning elections across the country. But this isn't 2016, when the divide between DSA and mainstream Democrats in the midst of the Democratic presidential primary exploded into a conflict that is still ongoing in some pockets of left-wing Twitter and Blue Sky. Sure, you've seen a lot of socialism is coming concerns from some Democrats, but others are starting to say, if we want to win elections and energize the party, we need to hear what DSA has to say. Here's Kentucky Democratic Governor Andy Beshear talking to CNN's Pamela Brown today.
Just to drill down a little bit more on the DSA, do you believe that this is a blip on the radar for the Democratic Party with these more progressive socialist candidates being elected? Or do you think that this could be the future of the Democratic Party and it could be changing before our eyes in the way the Republican Party changed with Trump? What do you think?
I think the Democratic Party has to be a big tent party where people can have different ideas on how we solve a problem as long as we agree that that problem exists.
So what does DSA want? Do they want to elect more left-leaning Democrats or replace them? Is this a left-wing Tea Party movement or something else entirely? To find out, I spoke to Charles Homans. He's a reporter from the New York Times and New York Times Magazine who just did a deep dive into what DSA wants to do next. Charles, welcome to What A Day.
Thanks for having me.
So it feels like there are more Democratic Socialist candidates on the ballot than ever before this year. And in a lot of cases, they're winning their primaries against more moderate Democrats. Now, as you wrote in your piece, DSA has been around for a while. Socialists have been around the United States for a very long time. Why do you think DSA candidates are having such a successful summer?
I mean, it's very interesting. And I think you don't want to overstate the scope of this. I mean, it's what they're achieving is still far less than what, for instance, the Tea Party achieved in 2010 in terms of the sheer numbers. But they are really multiplying the number of people they have, especially in Congress. It's now looking like the sort of DSA caucus in Congress is probably going to go from 2 people, what it is currently, to 7 people in the next term, which is, you know, again, in terms of the overall makeup of Congress, not a huge number, but is a real growth for them. And I think that you can point to a number of things, but probably the biggest one is like they are very well positioned to take advantage of both the sort of real collapse of faith that even Democratic voters have in the Democratic Party right now, and also the way in which the party is now out of sync with its voters on a couple of issues for various reasons, one being Israel-Palestine and another being data centers and sort of, you know, big tech in general. Like these are areas where DSA has been able to move very quickly to kind of seize ground that Democrats have been very, you know, reluctant or slowed to occupy.
Can you just quickly explain what the Democratic Socialists of America is and where it came from? Because they would say they are not a political party. That's not how they describe themselves. But like if you watch CNN, you know, there are Democrats and then there are members of DSA.
They are technically not a political party. They are an organization that exists, you know, somewhat within the Democratic Party at this point, but formally apart from it and is sort of agnostic about the Democratic Party. And if you talk to them, you know, people involved in DSA will be very frank about the fact that they have a sort of, you know, opportunistic or convenience-based relationship with the Democratic Party. This is an organization that's actually been around since 1982, but for all intents and purposes, it really became an electorally meaningful organization in 2017 after Bernie Sanders' run for president in 2016, when a lot of people who came out of that moment, which was this really transformative moment for the left, went into DSA, which had been this very sort of small, you know, essentially kind of an intellectual group that wasn't really a presence or a factor at all in electoral politics, and made it a vehicle to sort of to pursue socialist politics within the two-party system, which was a really transformative idea.
I often joke that the 2016 Democratic primary was the most important event in human history, and we will never move past it. So how did the organization get from there to where we are now, where you have Mayor Zahram Mamdani of New York being a member and, like, more members being more active and winning elections?
I think you could argue that DSA has really advanced by one of two means. One is sort of these moments that are perceived on the left in this country as a real crisis. So, you know, their membership has grown enormously in moments like the aftermath of the 2016 election, 2020 during the pandemic. And at the same time, they've advanced politically by virtue of having some genuinely very talented politicians. You know, AOC is a great example of that. Mamdani has also given this like real boost, I think, to not only the profile, but the membership of DSA. You know, they've been drawing, you know, a whole kind of new wave of members ever since he won. And by those two means, they've really sort of evolved from, as you say, I think they were kind of considered a curiosity in the Democratic coalition. And this year, I think, starting last year with Mamdani's election, really kind of, I think, gave them a legitimacy within the Democratic coalition to the extent that they can be categorized as part of that.
We'll get back to my conversation with Charles Homans in a moment. If you want to hear about more genuinely talented politicians, make sure to subscribe. Leave a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Watch us on YouTube and share with your friends. More to come after some ads. What a Day is brought to you by ZBiotics. Let's face it. After a night with drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. I have to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is, until I found pre-alcohol. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Every time I have pre-alcohol before drinks, I notice a difference the next day. Even after a night out, I can confidently plan on getting in my running workout without worry. Mondays don't move for anyone. Pre-alcohol works overnight so you can have a real weekend and still show up sharp. ZBiotics.com/WAD, code WAD for 15% off. What a Day is brought to you by HomeServe. Here's the thing about the home disasters that sneak up and bite you. Most of them cost more than a car repair. HomeServe offers plans starting at $4.99 a month. With HomeServe, when something goes wrong, you're not scrambling, you're just making one call. HomeServe is like a subscription for your home. For as little as $4.99 a month, they've got your back. Regular homeowner's insurance usually doesn't cover a lot of the day-to-day wear and tear. Plumbing failures, HVAC breakdowns, electrical issues. It's super simple. Choose a plan for your needs and budget, and when something on your plan goes wrong, just call their 24/7 hotline to start the repair process. Your cooling system isn't going to warn you before it quits. HVAC breakdowns, burned out motors. These repairs hit hardest when it's 95 degrees and you need AC the most. Don't wait until you're sweating it out to figure out you're not covered. I'm not a homeowner, but if I were, HomeServe would be my choice, especially given just how expensive home repairs can be. Your next costly home repair is already coming. Act now and get protected with a plan through HomeServe. For 50% less your first year, go to homeserve.com/WAD to find the plan that's right for you. That's homeserve.com/WAD for 50% less. Savings compared to renewal price. Void in Florida.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across 6 southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th, Watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You've never been one to settle. Stand down or stand still. You're a lifelong learner, energized by excellence. There's a fire inside you you can't ignore. You've got competition to outrun, momentum to build on, and your own high standards to meet. Stop now? Not a chance. At Capella University, we help you catch what you're chasing because you've always had the drive. Now, go earn the degree. Capella University, what can't you do? Visit capella.edu to learn more.
Let's get back to my conversation with Charles Homans. It's interesting also because you're starting to see mainline, mainstream Democratic voters supporting DSA candidates. But with that kind of growth, there's going to be disagreements over vision or even what makes a DSA candidate. And you wrote about some of the splits within the organization. Where did you find some tension in DSA over the course of your reporting? What are people mad about?
I mean, it's interesting. One of the biggest tensions is really over, you know, to what degree they should be participating in these Democratic primaries at all. I mean, as the organization has become more successful, this has become a more kind of acute, concrete question. You know, the DSA is its own sort of big tent, and it has factions in it that are just a couple clicks to the left of what you would consider kind of a normal progressive Democrat, and then other people who are outright, you know, Marxist-Leninist and
right.
are really committed in many cases to an idea of politics that doesn't involve or isn't limited to running in Democratic primaries. You know, there's tension around whether they would even support AOC if she were to run for president in 2028. For instance, the two chairs of the National DSA, and this gives you some sense of the organization, actually disagree very sharply on that question. And there's also a lot of tension around foreign policy. I mean, I think there's sort of, even though directionally everybody in DSA basically is pro-Palestine, there are kind of, you know, divisions, I think, around the question of just sort of what that means in the organization. You know, what do you think of October 7th, for instance? There's varying views on that within DSA right now. So there's really a pretty wide spectrum, I think, of arguments kind of from everything from process to policy happening right now inside of the organization.
But DSA seems uniformly focused on putting pressure on the Democratic establishment. In your view, is DSA trying to move the Democratic Party to the left, or is it trying to replace the Democratic Party?
I think the answer is sort of both, depending on the time frame you're talking about. And this is another thing, as with many things, that is very actively debated inside of DSA. But I think the kind of median position in DSA is sort of that it is good to work within, you know, it's working for them to work inside the Democratic Party right now. You know, Bernie really showed the opportunity to kind of level up left-wing politics by simply participating in the process. And it's hard to, you know, remember what a revolutionary idea that was in 2016. You know, for decades before this, you know, leftist candidates had basically been sort of unhappy third-party candidates and had spent a lot of time sort of railing against the system. And Bernie really kind of changed the game on that. And I think there's a lot of people in DSA, especially in the chapters that actually now have almost a decade's experience actually winning elections, like New York, that would like to kind of keep on that path. They think it's succeeding. They think there is real opportunity there. But I think that everybody in DSA, you know, for the most part, has, you know, maybe not everybody, but certainly the majority who are interested in electoral work, you know, view this as the Democratic Party as a means to an end. And like in their ideal future, would love to be a standalone, you know, political organization, a standalone party. Whether that's realistic, you know, there's a lot of debate about that. But that is sort of, you know, I think there's a sort of sense of the instrumentality of the Democratic Party for their purposes right now.
I want to go back to something you said a little bit earlier. You referenced the Tea Party movement. And the Tea Party movement, for those who were in high school, I guess, in 2009, 2010, was a right-wing movement that was aimed, in the beginning, kind of at shrinking the size of government, but also yelling at Barack Obama, then president. Obviously, DSA is a standalone organization. It is not a movement of Democrats aimed at Democrats. But do you think that there's a chance the Democratic Party could try to use DSA in the same way as kind of a means by which of refreshing its image, of figuring out a new path forward in response to a presidential loss it didn't expect, kind of similar to how the GOP used the Tea Party after losing to Barack Obama once and then twice?
There's certainly a very vigorous debate about what to do with and about DSA inside of the Democratic Party right now. And I think there is a strong strain of both kind of this, you know, self-identified reformers in the party and certainly progressives in the party that very much hold to that view that, like, look, this is good for us. The tent is growing. They're bringing in all this energy. You know, the other side of the argument within the Democratic Party is that DSA is something more like MAGA, which, you know, I think Republicans similarly kind of laughed off at first and then tried to accommodate and eventually were, you know, wholly devoured by. And, like, the question is whether that actually works without a sort of Trump figure, you know, at the top of the organization. But I think that it's a question of what, you know, does the DSA actually have something to offer Democrats? I mean, and that's sort of the hard question that I think a lot of Democrats are kind of asking right now. You know, this is not a movement that is actually growing the, you know, footprint of the party in the same way as the Tea Party did, you know, by turning safe Republican seats redder. You know, the DSA is turning safe Democratic seats, you know, more lefty. They've not demonstrated the ability to win in any sort of really contested district at this point. And they are carrying with them ideas that are in some cases popular and in some cases very unpopular. And I think that is sort of the concern from, you know, the like DSA skeptical or DSA alarmist wings of the Democratic Party, is that this is something that's going to really change the party for the worst, both in terms of the policy from their standpoint and just the electoral viability of the Democratic Party.
Charles, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
That was my conversation with Charles Homans, political reporter for The New York Times and New York Times Magazine. We'll link to his piece in the show notes. Before we go, Long Play, Crooked's new limited series, is a must listen, just in time for midterms. For both major parties, the path to winning America runs through the South. But to win it, we have to understand it. And that's where Long Play comes in. Across six Southern states, Long Play examines the issues driving voters in a region that could shape the future of our politics and our country. In this week's episode, they're in South Carolina. Listen to Long Play on Amazon Music. That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, wonder at Trump's new polling low, and tell your friends to listen. And if you're into reading, and not just about how, according to Reuters Ipsos, the president now has reached an approval rating of 33%, the lowest rating of Trump in the poll's history, like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Jane Costin, and I wonder what it could be. The unpopular war, increasingly high prices, or the fact that the president of the United States is a weird jerk. What A Day is a production of Crooked Media. Our show is produced by Caitlin Plummer, Emily Four, Erica Morrison, and Adrian Hill. Our team includes Haley Jones, Greg Walters, Matt Berg, Joseph Dutra, Johanna Case, and Desmond Taylor. Our music is by Kyle Murdoch and Jordan Cantor. We had help today from the Associated Press. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across six Southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th, watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough, stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hi, this is Gronk from Dudes on Dudes. I'm here to tell you about protecting your end zone with Wet
extra large flushable Dude Wipes. Unlike dry wiping with toilet paper, Dude Wipes clear instead of smear. Wetter, cleans better. Goodbye, dingleberries. Goodbye, itch and irritation. Plus, if you take Gronk-sized grumpies, or as I like to call them, Gronkies, baby wipes won't do. You need extra big Dude Wipes to handle the job. So don't fumble the ball with toilet paper. Stop being an a-hole to your b-hole and start using Dude Wipes. Available on Amazon and major retailers nationwide. Dude Wipes, best clean, pants down.